Welcome to this week's 2 Men in the Middle. This is where 2 men in the middle of America talk about politics. And we used to say with our boots firmly on the ground in a red state. We're still in Kansas, so I guess that's
still
true.
Applies.
We're still a pretty red state. I am Craig Huey.
I'm Brandon Kinnig.
And this week, it has been 7 days since our last podcast, and it literally feels like 3 years. This is one of those weeks where Brandon and I, we get together and it's like, okay, what are we going to talk about that we can contain in an hour? And we don't start on one topic and run down 1,000 different rabbit holes with everything.
Oh, we could easily do that with one topic. There's so much.
And we wanted to go back to when we first were setting up. I'm like, let's go back to the Peter Strzok hearing. And you kind of scratched your head and you're like, that's right, that was last week.
I could have remember when that was. I mean, that was already out of my mind because so much has happened the last couple of days.
That was that was like first base. That was the first step for everything, for this whole kind of week. Just as a Republican, as somebody that's been a Republican your whole life, come to age under Reagan, before we get into this, just what's your feeling right now about what you've seen in the Republican Party, what's happened the last couple weeks, and just give us a thumbnail as somebody who's been a part of the party, who's worked for the party on various levels, just what's your gut check this week tell you?
Well, the party is imploding. The entire Republican philosophy as it pertains to over 50 years of foreign policy has just been turned over on its head. And we're grappling with a president that is just intent on causing destruction and really a Republican Congress that refuses to react and is just kind of acquiescing to that. And so it's difficult to say what happens from here. But I mean, this is the most convoluted state I've ever seen the party. I mean, you have dysfunction in all political parties from time to time. That's basically comes and goes and kind of ebbs with, you know, cyclical. This is far beyond that. This is a lot of damage, you know. And the question is, what arises out of this?
Yeah.
And where we go looking at, you know, 2020.
Yeah, if we go back to the Strzok hearings that the House put on. I'm sitting there and I start getting texts from a variety of people saying, are you watching this? Are you watching this? And I knew it was going on. So I turned it on and kind of started viewing, and just to level set everybody, because again, this happened a week ago, but it feels like 2 years. This is where Peter Strzok, this is the FBI agent who was having an affair with the other FBI agent,
right,
Lisa Page, who was involved in both the Hillary Clinton email investigation and the Donald Trump Russian investigation in 2016. This was finally the House pulling him in front of them. And I guess this was supposed to be the "we got you" moment. This was where, hey, we're going to walk through this and show the American people and get you to admit or to testify or get you under oath and show the American people that your bias is what led to opening up the whole Trump investigation into Russia and opening up this whole can of worms.
Right, that it was rigged and that, you know, divert attention from the ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
And now I will start by saying that I don't find Peter Strzok a completely sympathetic figure. I think he has a lot of baggage.
He's a smirker,
blameless.
Too. Do you notice? He's always got that look on his face. Like, he just went up and just slap him right in the mouth.
But I mean, the fact of the matter was, he is biased and he let that get the best of him. And, you know, he was communicating via text message, which is not smart for an FBI agent to do, knowing that all that's going to be on the record.
I would fire him just for that.
Oh,
being
absolutely
so stupid that I'm texting my lover on my work phone, and I am he's the highest ranking counterterrorism agent at the FBI.
An egregiously stupid mistake. No way around it.
Unbelievably stupid. Almost like they were trying to get caught.
Right. I mean, he's already been admonished by the FBI's inspector general. But now we have hearings that have managed to turn him into a sympathetic figure, which
absolutely,
I would have never guessed could have occurred. Yeah. I mean, it was a very poor display by Congress. You know, for those that were watching, you had Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas who immediately ripped into him regarding his affair, completely
absolutely
out of the bounds of what the hearings were about. It was a sad performance, but it gave credence to the notion out there that Congress is dysfunctional, and it really showed Americans why they dislike Congress so much.
Absolutely. I don't know how you can get through watching or listening to that and not be disgusted by Congress. We talked about as we got started, if you had an inkling or a suspicion that Congress was just a dysfunctional body that really wasn't capable of from a legislative perspective, passing serious legislation for the country, well, that little 12-hour show was just a peek behind the kimono that showed you whatever you thought or however bad you thought it was, it's 10 times worse. Plus two, I think it showed Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert and Issa and those kind of folks that when you go on Fox News, you can rant against Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and the FBI. And when it's a friendly audience and nobody is there to kind of punch back, it's really easy to do. But when you have somebody, to your point, nobody's looking at Peter Strzok with what you just laid out, which I think is completely fair, in looking at him as a sympathetic figure. But when you get done with 10 or 11 hours of testimony, and I think the general consensus was, while Strzok came off looking douchey most of the time, he did come off as credible. And the Republicans, it became apparent in the first 40 minutes, this is for show.
Well, they weren't after the truth. It was an attempt to embarrass him and humiliate him, and that's all it was. And that became painfully obvious.
Like I said, it takes a body as dysfunctional as the United States Congress to make Peter Strzok the sympathetic figure in that whole soap opera. What I've never understood, if Strzok was out to sink Trump, wouldn't he have leaked Trump's under investigation in 2016? The most damaging thing he could have done, he didn't do. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that he was biased, but the question is that bias completely interfere with his ability to conduct his job.
So let's unpack that for a minute, that he's biased. Give me your evidence, or give me your, what are you looking at that concludes he's biased?
Well, I would basically look at his text conversations that he had. You look at, political involvement, that as well. I mean, you basically put all of that together. And just if you are serving in that capacity, particularly the capacity he was serving in, you go to extra lengths to be outside of the political
process. I agree
process.
With that.
And
there
is an understanding that you are not overtly political, that you do not, announce your, loyalties or your, political affiliation or who you're supporting. I mean, that is extremely critical. I mean, you could say that's what got James Comey in trouble because he tried so much to be neutral to the fact that he, went the other way and just caused a lot of damage and ended up having everybody upset at him.
So I'm going to ask you an unfair question, and the only answer I'm going to allow you to give is a yes or a no. Okay.
Okay.
The five ranking Republicans on that committee show their text and what they said about Donald Trump from the 2016 election. Are they worse or better than Strzok?
Well, that's not a yes or no.
Oh, crap. I did that wrong, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I was trying to out-clever myself. I was trying to be a lawyer, and look what I did. And thank you for pointing that out, too, Brandon. All right, damn it. I'll just try to answer without being all smarty.
But,
come on. If you looked at some of the Republicans, they have said far worse than Strzok said.
Absolutely.
But you're right. The context of him being an FBI agent certainly changes.
They have. And
in,
I can immediately point to, Kevin McCarthy in the House of California. I mean, he is on record during the campaign is, saying that the Russians have something on Trump. That,
absolutely.
Without a doubt. I mean, so you can go through all of these past statements, and there's a lot there. But again, that's where the, political hypocrisy comes in, and that's not being acknowledged.
And calling Trump a moron, that's just standard fare, isn't it? I mean, calling Trump an idiot, making fun of Trump's intelligence, as Strzok did, there's been any number of Trump's own cabinet, of Trump's inner circle, that have said the exact same thing. I guess the point I'm making is I didn't see anything over the top that would lead me to believe that he is, at his core, biased against Trump. He does not like Trump, but I didn't see enough that said, okay, he could, that he had the feelings of such that he would go out of his way to influence his investigation. Because again, layers above, layers below. It wasn't just him. What he would have had to done, what we'd have to have done to influence other people around him would have been extraordinary, and people would have caught on to it almost immediately. The Republicans in Congress are portraying him as he's the only person involved in this investigation. He was the only one who really collected evidence, and the whole other right. department doesn't exist. Therefore, he is completely responsible. And because he sent four texts that said bad things to his lover late at night, who hasn't texted something to a woman before, maybe to try to impress that person.
Right.
I mean, that's a fairly big leap.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't detract or take away from the fact that there are serious allegations and need to be investigated. And so this is being used as an attempt to invalidate the entire investigation based on one man's supposed biases. Yeah. And again, you can look at him as having made mistakes and acted improperly and maybe not completely ethically. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, there is real substance here that needs to be investigated. And those two beliefs are not diametrically opposed. You can hold both of those at the same time.
And don't you, if you're serious about investigating those as a legislative body, you do that behind closed doors.
Right.
You do that with a small group of people who understand the process.
And you mean you don't have a circus hearing? Yeah, a hearing, which is basically all this was. It was for the cameras, and this has become par and course for Congress. Anytime you have this type of hearing, it's about grandstanding and getting the rhetoric out there, and it's all about reelection to the base.
It was 5 minutes for each person. Most of these were just 5 minute speeches. There was very little that came out of this that we didn't already know, and it went on for like 11 and a half hours. I don't understand what the goal of this was. Now, Lisa Page gets pulled in. She's doing this behind closed doors. They've said, hey, she's been actually very agreeable. She's been somebody that actually has offered some information that is useful. And don't you kind of hold both of those up and say, if you're going to do this, there's a way to do it. That is the way. This was just an absolute circus. And a circus for who?
Yeah.
Was this all just done for Trump?
I think it was for Trump. It was for, the base, for many of these members of Congress going into the fall to, rev them up and show that, hey, we're on Trump's side. We have his back. I mean, it was a spectacle. It was embarrassing, I think, for those of you us who are not part of that base, who actually care about the truth and the pursuit of the truth, because none of that happened with this.
No. Is Trump's base just protesting now? I saw something where some guy said, I voted for Trump and I'm going to vote for him in 2020 and I plan on coming out and just give it the double bird, and I did it again. Are people that are now part of Trump's kind of 35% that never move and don't move, are those folks, if you're still with him after this week, is this more about protesting the left's treatment of you think, over the last 8 to 12 years, where you've been talked down to, put down? As a conservative, you've probably experienced this, where there are whole groups moving away from you and kind of how those groups have made you feel. If you're still voting for Trump at this point, are you just giving that the finger, and this is just you're just a protest vote at this point?
I think so. I think it's less about ideas and substance. I think it's not about ideas and substance now. It's about basically standing up and to what they call the establishment, who they feel has been at war with them for all of these years. And there's that mindset. Although I would say that there are a core group of Trump voters that are changing. I've read some articles recently this week about those who work in service industries like construction, landscaping, that
absolutely
are being hit hard by the reductions in guest worker visas, and who were Trump supporters and have said, I'm not supporting him next time around. There are others. I think
the first group of farmers showed up today in the Capitol to protest and say, hey, these tariffs are starting now.
They're starting to hurt us. Exactly. Absolutely. And you have, I think Newsweek had a piece where they interviewed Trump voters after what happened on Monday. And I think it was three out of the four are, you know, now have second thoughts about him and, you know, are upset with what happened. And one of the four, you know, is fine with it. So, you know, you're starting to see that crumble. But you will have that hardcore segment who, where it's not about ideas, it's just about feeling an emotion, and it's about feeling, you know, validated and having, you know, somebody who ticks, you know, the other side off. And they just thrive on that. They like that, you know, and they, anytime that they see that there's this, you know, just, you know, avalanche of criticism, you know, they revel in that because they see that as an attack on themselves, because I feel part of it is personal, you know, they back this guy. And so, but some voters, I don't think that they're going to throw in the towel because they aren't going to admit that they were wrong. And so they're going to just be there till the end. And so attack on him and his attack on them.
Yeah.
It's that mindset.
You know, you've got that person who represents, or you feel represents you when you've been abandoned politically, socially, economically. And I think that's where, and it's sad that so many folks in this country feel that alienated, that they turn to Trump and they're still clinging to him, even as he had a week like no other president in the United States. So he comes out. So we started off a week ago with the congressional hearings. And again, if you thought Congress was not fulfilling its duties, well, there you have it with that. Now we headed to the NATO conference. And I think both of us kind of had a really, as most people did, just this really uneasy feeling that the last one, which didn't go well, was really just laying the groundwork for this one, where he was really going to get off the chain.
That this was going to be a disaster. And we had signals that that was going to occur.
Yes.
So right before he goes into this NATO summit, he does an interview with ABC. And, you know, he is asked about relationships with countries. He refuses to label Russia as a foe. But guess what? He labels the European Union as a foe of the United States. That's news, I think, to most Americans and to the EU.
Allies are now a foe.
Yes. Well, and again, it's about drawing this kind of moral equivalence, you know, with bad state actors like Russia and North Korea and typical allies that really, in Trump's world, you know, it's not about allies or foes. It's about like who's transacting
with
it's a transactional relationship. Yeah. I mean, history and shared values don't enter into that.
And
obviously,
Canadians are nice. Brits are not,
right,
compared to Canadians.
Have you seen the British press and how they go after people?
Did you see
the headlines after the summit?
They are fired up. I mean, they cannot wait to get him there.
Well, look at how he treated Theresa May, like, to the British press, just, you know, basically tore her down. And again, this is the problem, because he will go after allies like Justin Trudeau, Theresa May, Angela Merkel, you know, in very public ways, but not do the same when it comes to people like Vladimir Putin. He can't bring himself to just act that way.
We'll get to Pootie, because that was his period at the end of the fantastic sentence. But I think he was agitated at the people in London. He didn't like the protest. He didn't like being the big
balloon.
Well,
he acknowledged the protest too, which is unusual.
Which is unusual. Usually
protest.
Lets that go. I think that got under his skin. I think so. When he sat down with the Sun, he just kind of let all of that come out in that interview about May. How about when he goes and he basically endorsed her biggest political rival for being prime minister? Boris, that one floppy-headed dude.
Boris Johnson, is
the guy who looks like your stereotypical like 80s British punk rock.
Right, who isn't in the government anymore, who left Theresa May's conservative government.
Yes.
So let's think about that for a second. Endorsed a rival.
Yeah.
I believe intimately getting involved in an ally government's politics in that way, commenting on Brexit, which is not a domestic issue for us. It's a domestic issue for the Brits.
Completely as far away from that as he could.
Absolutely. And again, it's unprecedented to have an American American president just, you know, be so deep into another country's politics like that.
And didn't only question the policy, really attacked May on her implementation of the policy. He made that personal. You know, Brexit is going terrible because Theresa May is not doing it right.
There was also a thinly veiled threat there, if you didn't catch that, about trade relationship with the United States might suffer if there wasn't a hard Brexit on her part, if it was just a soft Brexit.
What did I miss? I heard this somewhere, but the EU signed some big trade deal with Japan today.
Yes, that just happened today.
So we're already going out and saying, fine, we'll just do this on our own.
And again, this is an example of where, you know, we, Britain, are going to suffer. You know, this is the consequences of, you know, tariff policy and you know, departing from free trade policy. I mean, you know, it's going to happen. There's real world consequences. And, you know, and at the end, it's consumers, it's our producers here in the United States, distributors, businesses that are going to suffer for that. And those costs are going to be passed down to the consumer.
So Trump shows up. He has a fiasco in London. I think he actually went to London after the NATO meeting, if my order of operations are
right,
correct.
Right, I think that's correct.
Yeah. At the NATO meeting, he starts off strong with the lunch with the NATO secretary. Basically, this is this exchange he has where suddenly he peels off to Germany and the pipeline and the money that they feed Russia and how they're basically held captive to Russia because they get so much of their energy. And people are just looking at Trump like, I don't know what you're, we understand what you're talking about. There's a pipeline. Yes, there was some controversy around the pipeline and how much of their natural gas they're getting from Russia.
Well, surprise, he was completely off in his numbers how much, you know, natural gas Germany actually gets from Russia.
We're not talking about that in typical Trump fashion. And he does this all the time in trade. This is the Canadian 275% tariff on dairy that he pulls one thing out of context. And when the guy was trying to bring him back, Trump just wouldn't come back until finally just put his hands up and said, okay, we'll just, whenever you decide we can start and we can have a meeting, we'll just go ahead.
Well, I mean, he can't connect the dots. He doesn't. I mean, he's not a big picture guy, you know, so that's his issue. So, you know, when it comes to interviews that he does with the press, he can never be held accountable or responsible for anything because he constantly, you know, just changes gears, completely, you know, flips to another topic. And so, you know, this is a pattern we see over and over again with
him. So what do you think of the defense of the president of that? Don't look at his rhetoric. His rhetoric's awful. No one's going to defend it. But look at his policy. And if you separate policy from rhetoric, there are things that he's done that actually are positive and in some ways stick to core conservative values. Let's take Russia, for example. The idea that we have given weapons to Ukrainians. Yes, we have, at a very small level, nothing that is designed to escalate that conflict. But on face value, we have.
We have, yeah.
He did put sanctions on.
He, you know, if you go back to the sanctions, yes, the sanctions were finally implemented by the administration, but several months. You were talking about the sanctions were ratified by Congress last fall by the Senate. They weren't implemented fully until, you know, late this spring. Every excuse to not take action against Russia, to basically draw it out and not speak publicly on anything that would be perceived as a slight against the Russian Federation. And so that has been a tendency all along. Trump has said over and over again that he gets along well with Putin. I mean, that goes back to the campaign. You can find so many, you know, audio clips of him, you know, regurgitating that. And so, yes, he has taken action. That action has been forced. And so, you know, fortunately, we've had people in the intelligence community around him, people like John Kelly, that have forced his hand. But I it's difficult to give him credit for that because, you know, it wasn't something that would have taken place without, you know, this consensus around
him. He's been forced into it. Right. He's shown no real strong leadership in this area. And it sounds like he's done just enough to create a talking point. And then he's right back to what we saw later in the week, which is never criticizing Putin, never right. kind of just the reflexive reaction he has to the 2016 election and just that whole thing that we'll get to in a minute.
Foreign policy has been a disaster. I believe trade policy is a disaster. Yep. He's had some achievements on the domestic front, and I have some Democratic friends that acknowledge this, but you know, most of that, if you look in terms of tax and regulations, that could have been accomplished with any generic Republican president.
I think that's a great comment, that to get that tax cut through, the Republicans wanted to do that. They've been wanting to do that for decades. You could have put any generic, stereotypical Republican, and they could have got that
right,
done.
The president wasn't intimately involved with the policy aspect.
No, he was not.
In any way.
And we've been unable to move on immigration and other policies, in some ways because of direct issue with the president. So the thing with NATO is you and I, we've never lived under an America that wasn't the vital cog in NATO. We don't know what that looks like. And we're so ingrained, I think, in what NATO, that NATO's been the driving force for 70 years of peace and prosperity. I don't understand what is the onus to blow that up, other than just wanting to throw a grenade at something. I get it. They're not paying as much as we are. There is a goal for them, I think, by like 2020 or 2021 to 2% reach that 2%
GDP for defense spending.
And then in classic Trump fashion, if 2% is good, well, let's bump it up to 4%. And people are like, that would represent a militarization in Europe that you really must not understand the history of European countries if you think that is a really, really good idea.
Well, he doesn't. And I think that if you were following geopolitics in the 90s, it could have been easy to fall into this trap that, you know, maybe NATO has outlived its relevance. Oh. That is no longer the case because that was pre-Putin. That was when we thought that Russia under Boris Yeltsin was on a democratic track.
Yeah.
That is not the case. We have an autocrat authoritarian in charge of Russia who has basically, you know, all but said he wants to recreate the Soviet Union in terms of territory and expansion.
Absolutely.
That's his end goal.
Putin said the greatest failure, the greatest sadness in recent history is the fall of the Soviet Union? I mean, he...
Right. He's a KGB operative.
He is a Soviet operative.
Absolutely. And if you look at his intervention in Crimea, the incursions into Georgia, the gradual taking of land, the threat to Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia that are right on Russia's doorstep, NATO is a bulwark against that. And so you mess with NATO, I mean, you have the potential to create this domino effect and everything collapses. There's a reason, too, that the United States, and this started under the Obama administration, and I do give credit to the Trump administration for continuing in it, but the installation of American troops in Poland, that is to counteract any type of Russia aggression on Europe's doorstep.
That's what I've heard too. We just need to conduct a big old massive military exercise in Poland as a way to show Putin that, hey, we're not messing around with this. I was guilty this week of when so much talk about Russia, I still frame Russia in some ways in Soviet Union terms. I was shocked to hear that the economy of Texas is bigger than Russia's economy. From an economic standpoint, comparing them to a European country, them and Italy have the same economic size and output. And what this gets to is this is not the old Soviet superpower, both economically or militarily.
No.
Russia, I was surprised at how big of a step Russia has taken back, and that we are still treating them under Trump. And in some ways, you know, G-Dub and Obama did the same thing. We just have not figured out how to crack that code with what Russia really is and how to treat them appropriately for what they are now in the modern world.
Exactly. And economically, yeah, they are no counterpart to us at all. And,
no.
You know, and they're hurting, and they do not have a diverse economy. Most
oil
of their
and
economy
gas.
Fossil
that's
fuels.
It.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so when those run out, I mean, they're not going to have anything. And so there's no need to really kowtow to them on that front. You know, I think a lot of our foreign policy has been based on trying to ensure that they do not ally with China against our interests,
yeah.
And get involved with other spheres of influence, you know, not only in Europe, but also in Asia, you know, and a lot of that mindset dates back to Russian involvement in Afghanistan and what happened in the Middle East, you know. But I think that there's really that fear is kind of misaligned now. It's not something we need to worry about. So the only reason you would kowtow to Russia is if there's, you know, circumstances that we don't know with our current president.
So let's get into the final act three of the week, which is his visit in Helsinki. We talked about this before. Who set this up, and who from Trump's camp let him go?
That is a great question, and I have been wondering that all week, and I haven't found any solid source.
I did a solid hour of Googling today.
Who
I
that
couldn't
would be.
Find anything about, did he call, did Putin call? How did this happen is still a little bit of a mystery.
My inclination is that this is something he really wanted to do and could have been convinced otherwise,
so.
And
yep.
So he was going to do this no matter what.
Yep.
Because if you look at it, there was no set agenda going into it. They had
none
in terms of what they were going to talk about. In terms
yep.
of, you know, goals, what was going to come out of this, which is really, I mean, pretty unbelievable for something of this nature, a one-on-one summit with no witnesses. The only other people that know what took place are the translators, which I would really like to.
Well, that's kind of dangerous calling that translator in. I would love to have the information, but I understand that setting that as
you
a precedent.
Right, you can't
that's
do that.
Really, no. That's really spooky.
But again,
stuff.
Therein lies the problem. I mean, this should have never happened as a one-on-one
happened.
Without the appropriate members of the NSA or intelligence community.
Yep.
To be there, you know, and they weren't. So we have no idea, and we will never know exactly what happened.
It just so much of this, and I'd like to know where you're at as a Republican. The only natural conclusion is that something must be wrong. There has to be something between Russia and Trump, because just looking at this, it makes no sense. None of it does.
I keep saying this over and over again. It's an issue of massive debt to the Russians.
It has to
business
be.
Business interests that we do not know about, or personal damaging, embarrassing information that they have on him that he, but due to his ego, does not want to get out there.
I can't imagine, other than what you just said, and I can't imagine somebody didn't come to him and say, listen, there's an overarching perception anyway that you're in Putin's pocket. Let's go through what positive is going to come of this. And once you got about to the 19 millionth negative point, I guess it's still, well, let's get on the plane. Let's get this over with.
Right. One of the British tabloids actually referred to him as Putin's poodle, which I thought was an apt description.
And I think he's at the summit. They meet for almost 2.5-ish hours. Nobody really knows what that is.
Right. I want to rewind for a second, because another sign of what we saw was going to take place happened, you know, I think it was either late night or early morning hours when he was tweeting. And I'm going to read this verbatim so Trump out of context.
You have to read Trump verbatim, because you can't string the words together, because sometimes they're so unintelligible.
They are, yeah. So before the summit, he said, quote, our relationship with Russia has never been worse,
yep.
thanks to many years of U.S. foolishness and stupidity.
Yes.
Let's digest that for a second.
Yes.
He basically has thrown every prior president under the bus, going all to Reagan,
yeah.
Bush, Clinton, and basically said that we are to blame. Not Russia, not all of the action they've taken, you know, not their, you know, hostile aggression to our allies. It's us. We're
not to blame. The fact that Putin's Putin. And I think I've got my timeline on this right, that he tweets that starts making the rounds. And then he said that during the press conference.
I think that's right. What he was asked during the press conference was about, you know, Russia, whether or not Russia was to blame for what has taken place in the U.S. relationship, and he backpedaled a little and just said, there's a lot of blame to go around. That was his response.
And I think he said that there's been a lot of foolishness and stupidity on the part of America.
Yeah.
Then he backtracks it to, there's a lot of blame to go around. I have never seen a president on foreign soil feel like he's basically attacking the United States, which in some ways, that's what that felt like.
And right. That was in some ways, first.
That's a justified interpretation of that.
Right. I would say that tweet was the first shot fired. And then, you know, what he actually said in terms of throwing our intelligence community under the bus, you know, in front of Putin was, I mean, that was the shot heard around the world.
And what about the questions that the Reuters and the AP guy, they came right at him. It was easy to see that he was unprepared, and he pivots back to this campaign speak about Hillary and servers, and it's just unconnected. Steve Schmidt, the Republican turned independent on MSNBC, had the only thing I keep coming back to, it was the musings of an imbecile. And that's what he looked like. And Putin is very good that if you're digging yourself in a hole, I'm
going to
sit here until you bury yourself. It literally, he looked outmanned, outclassed, outgunned, totally unprepared. That summit couldn't have been any worse for Trump and America and positive for Putin than. Then there's no way they could have scripted it to go that bad.
Oh, it was a coup d'etat for Russia in terms of PR. And I mean, Putin had to be getting out the champagne, the vodka on his plane back, and celebrating.
When Fox and Friends tells you screwed the pooch as Trump, that's when you know, boy, I really must have done something bad. So he gets through this presser.
Right.
There's an immediate blow up.
Well, and let's jump back during the presser, too. He made a statement about, you know, joining forces with Russia to combat cyber attacks.
Absolutely. And how could one forget that one?
That is, you know, that would be like the United States joining with Al-Qaeda to fight terrorism.
And the idea that Mueller can bring investigators to Russia.
Oh, and they're
so
going to help
answer these questions.
Answer the questions together. And help investigate. Well, Chris Wallace did an interview with Putin, and Chris Wallace asked tougher questions than our American president did.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he is putting this indictment in front of Putin, and Putin won't look at it. So how can you partner with somebody who refuses to even acknowledge the indictment?
So I make fun of Fox News all the time, and I think appropriately, but Brett Hume, Chris Wallace, Shep Smith, those are legitimate news people.
Right.
And you do have to separate from that clown show they have on with Ingram and Hannity. And I guess now Tucker Carlson is trying to be the leader of that show.
All of the opinion and commentary is ridiculous.
Terrible.
That's awful.
Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. So Putin and Trump get through this press conference, and Trump again looks kind of befuddled. The performance is what it is. Allegedly, he gets on the plane and people start slowly introducing him to the feedback that he's getting. And then there's one report that he saw Newt Gingrich's tweet of, that was the biggest mistake he's ever made. He's got to clean that up. And he kind of loses it after that. That's when it all kind of hit home that if Newt, who has backed you every step of the way, is saying that was bad, you're getting ready for an avalanche of negative press coming your way on this.
Well, now we know what it takes for him to walk back anything. I mean, it literally has to be the sky falling and everybody around him agrees that it's bad.
It takes Fox News turning on you to make him go back and reevaluate. So he gets through 27-ish hours. He gets through an interview with Hannity. I think he talked to Tucker Carlson too, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He had an interview with Tucker. So he gets through two interviews with his friendlies at Fox and makes no correction, makes no hint.
No clarification.
That anything was wrong with that.
Right.
That he misspoke after 27 hours of just getting pounded. I heard the story today that John Kelly on the plane called GOP senators and members of the House and said, go out and rip us apart. Don't feel the need to protect us on this. You've got to start putting some distance. The only way we're going to get him to do this is if the fallout is so bad. And then Pence and Pompeo were the two that pulled him aside and said, you've got to read a prepared statement walking some of this back. We can't go on like this.
Oh, I believe that that's, yeah, completely how it went down.
And here comes the hostage video. So now we're at yesterday. Brandon, once again, this is one of those days that, you know, this is like the third time I've said this. You're the Republican. Walk me through the feeling of a president under your banner, what he did yesterday.
Well, President Trump might as well have been in handcuffs because that's what it looked like. I mean, and he clearly looked uncomfortable, and he does not conceal his emotions at all.
That whole, you know, huff, hands folded across,
being forced to read from a script. And remember, he made fun of President Obama for, quote, reading from a script. Yeah. He hates to do that. It did not sound genuine. It did not sound, that he really believed in the words that he was reading.
First rule of spin is the spin has to be at least believable.
And it comes down to the difference between would and wouldn't, as if that invalidates everything he said up until that point.
That everything was totally cool until just he that made one that statement. One thing. And I still don't quite understand, but okay, we'll give him that. So let's say all of that was legit and that's what really happened. How long did that last until he unwound all of that?
Well, yeah, and then we get to, it does not that long, basically.
The next day. Here he comes with, he put the tweet out that said, while some didn't like what I said, a lot of the top people at the intelligence really, really liked it. And even in the statement, he still had to throw in there, and I believe he improvised this, it was Russia or somebody else.
Or somebody else, yes.
Or somebody
he
else.
He added that, yeah.
And he added the big no collusion on it.
Oh, did you see what he took out from the script?
Something about we're going to help them prosecute these 12 people or something.
Bring them to justice, prosecute them.
He took that out.
That is very telling.
There is no collusion.
Yeah.
So even when they try to set him down and say, we know you don't like this, but this is for your own good, and just read this and it will make the pain go away. If it's about Russia, he still can't do it.
Well, it's not believable at all. And I think that most Americans watching that, had the same reaction. And there was that clarification or somebody else. There was the backpedaling. There's what, happened today when he was asked point blank if the Russians were still interfering in our elections, and he said no.
He said no because Putin told him they weren't.
And he believes him. He has no reason to doubt Putin, as he said before.
What do you think of the Russians stealing information on 500,000 registered voters? Isn't that the next step? I mean, running Facebook ads and smear campaigns of propaganda is one thing. Haven't we crossed a new threshold with that?
We have, yeah. I mean, and that's key. The Cambridge Analytica, the fact that their information was accessed from Russia, again, very telling. And then you have, on top of that, we know from last cycle, and this has been released, that they tried to hack into election databases in 21 states.
Absolutely. And they tried to directly get to the vote.
Right. And they were partially successful. They were able to, obtain some voters' information. So, yeah, I mean, the next step, again, it's part of being able to hyper-target with a misinformation campaign. I mean, that's what they're good at. And we're not the first country. They tried to do this in France during their elections. They've done this in Germany. But it's on a level we've never seen before because they have agents who are directly here infiltrating political organizations with that intent.
So as this progression happens, okay, this was just Facebook. This was just social media. Okay, then it was Cambridge Analytica, which was the next level. Now it's stealing people's direct information. Is it that big of a leap for you that if Mueller comes out or and says yes, they did access some of this data, how would you kind of interpret that? I guess what I'm saying is the saving grace that Trump has always used with this is nobody has ever said, and Rosenstein said this when they announced the latest indictments, they don't feel any direct voting was changed, or the outcome was not directly tied to Russian activities. What happens if we cross even that threshold in the smallest way?
Well, I still think that that threshold will be very difficult to prove.
It's going to be
in a court of law.
Absolutely,
that would be,
it is.
But there is enough. There could be enough to prove, particularly with Cambridge Analytica data, if that was used with permission. Because again, that was a firm that was directly in contact with the campaign, providing them information. You have Trump's current campaign manager from 2020, who basically spearheaded his data operations, regarding that. So I think there is enough there. And again, you may not be able to directly, point to Trump approving and authorizing, this type of activity, but you would have enough within the campaign epicenter, the inner circle, that, there was knowledge there. And that is just as damning, I think, because that goes to show that there was so much improper activity that occurred and there was no safeguards in place and there was intent that, they knew
intent
what they were doing.
Biggie.
Intent is what you have to prove.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just, being sloppy, not, knowing who you were speaking with or setting up meetings with, but that there was intent and knowledge of who you were dealing with and what the repercussions could be.
So we're two dudes who have jobs and families and enjoy politics so much. We decide to get together once a week. It just basically record conversation about it. But we also follow politics and current affairs and history probably at a level above your average citizen.
Right.
You certainly, you've been in the belly of the beast of the Republican Party. And we just gave a 35 to 40 minute synopsis of the last week, covered about 2% of actually what happened. And we talked about it was an exhausting week. You're hitting it, your friends, my wife is hitting me with, are you watching this? Did you just see that? Now that we're out of that week and we kind of look back and kind of can piece some of the things together, how do you just feel? I mean, how do you just feel about the presidency, the country? As a Democrat, my first reaction after horror of watching Trump's performance over the last week was, okay, how are we going to overplay our hand and overreact? John Brennan, who I'm not that big of a fan of, no, that wasn't treason. Treason is a very specific thing. Oh, and by the way, the penalty for treason is what? Capital.
Death, yeah.
We kill you. So let's come off that ledge a little bit. That was horrible enough. You don't have to make up something that describes how horrible that was. But at some point, you're like, I don't even want to politicize this or try to weaponize this for my side. I just feel bad for me and everybody else that we had to watch that last week.
Right, and for our nation. I mean, it supersedes politics, on every level, I think. I mean, if you care about your country, and I mean, it was embarrassing and it was detrimental, I think, to the intelligence community. If you're a member of the FBI or the CIA, I mean, how do you continue to do your job
to retirement
when you don't have the confidence of your commander in chief?
I mean, if you're 10 or 11 years in, I'm sure those guys have a nice retirement as they deserve it. It'd be, I'm just killing time. I'm going to get out of here with the pension and go.
It's one thing to be attacked constantly on Twitter as they are by the president. It's another thing to be on a foreign stage with a foreign leader who's an adversary and to be completely undermined.
And what I kept thinking too last week is this is Donald Trump, reality star, apprentice, billionaire, Taj Mahal, goofball, real estate, New York developer. All of this is over him. I don't ever remember, by far, in my opinion, Trump is the least qualified person ever to occupy the presidency of the United States. I don't think it's even close.
Right.
And we're going through all of these gyrations for this, and I'll use Steve Schmidt's words, imbecile. Why? I got sad a couple times last week watching this. Is if this were Reagan, if this were Bush the first, who by far from a foreign policy perspective was an absolute genius,
incredible experience,
and knew what he was doing. If this were one of them doing something that had never been seen before on in the foreign policy area, at least there would be an air of, yes, there is some confidence. This is a person who is putting some things together. We need to trust that the American president understands the world he's operating in. Here, it's just, here's this buffoon just swinging like a wrecking ball.
I think you hit on the key difference, Craig. There's no cause for optimism that things will change. That he'll get smarter, that he'll start to listen to his staff advisors. There's nothing there that would lead us to that conclusion. And it's a pattern that we're going to continue to see play out. And the question is, how much worse does it get? Do we just stay where we are? Does it, you know, increasingly just kind of devolve? Yeah. Where do we go?
And as a Republican, you have to know the strength and the power of an optimistic Republican president. This was the lesson of Ronald Reagan, because Republicans a lot of times can get pigeonholed as not caring about social issues, the party of big business. When a Republican can communicate to the American people a sense of optimism, it is a very powerful thing.
Reagan's sunny optimism. He led the country out of an economic malaise.
If you guys don't get what we're talking about because you're too young or you don't know,
go back, read
YouTube,
some of his speeches, listen.
Yeah, look at some of his things.
And there's a reason that Reagan won with landslide margins, too, in 1984, winning 49 out of 50
states.
Well,
he ran against Mondale and Carter. I mean, come on.
Very true. But, even if you disagree with his policies, virtually everybody respected Reagan. They liked him. He was an appealing character. He was self-deprecating. He was humble.
Yeah.
He knew how to apologize and when things didn't go the right way. But he made Americans feel optimistic about their country and where they were headed. And he was able to work with the party on the other side of the aisle.
That's enough of the Reagan love fest. I'll throw one to you that, yes, Reagan was the best Republican modern president in the modern era. But back to your point, there's no oxygen for that type of conversation with Trump.
No.
I think even his supporters are doing it to protest something they don't even really want to support or believe in this guy, because right, there's just nothing to believe in.
Well, and I think that even when you disagree with most presidents, you feel like that they have the best interest of the nation, of the American people at heart. And I don't really believe that with Trump. I think his number one interest is himself and how he looks and, you know, basically creating this image of deal maker, successful, businessman president. So if that isn't his top priority, that concerns me greatly.
For the first time, I feel like the American president would directly, purposefully, and intentionally screw the American people to make himself a dime, to meet his own objectives. There is nothing he would not do to anybody in his inner circle, in his cabinet, in his party, in his country.
Well, and he just doesn't understand any of these issues, and he doesn't care to understand them. And that reminds me, another, big jaw dropper that happened was in his interview with Tucker Carlson, where he openly speculated about whether or not Article 5 of NATO was needed. Article 5 is basically what says if one NATO country is attacked, we all come to the defense of that country. It has only been invoked once, and that was in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks to our benefit here in the United States. And so to openly question whether or not that's necessary, and then he makes some kind of quip about, like, Montenegro. That's a little country. Why do we need to?
Montenegro?
Right. And it is something about them being aggressive and they may start a war.
Which is ridiculous.
He clearly doesn't know geopolitics or anything, in the region.
And the fact that he can't put together that you let Montenegro into NATO, because it's NATO and it's Article 5 that in 70 years, that's why we haven't had to really invoke it.
Exactly. It's a deterrent. He doesn't understand it's a deterrent. You take that deterrent off the table, you risk that there's a great risk that calamity could occur and that there's going to be more instability, and particularly in the Baltic states.
Even people that I respect who are trying to find a way, it could have been easy to get on this week and just Trump ranted and just idiot, moron, and just spent an hour just absolutely ripping everything Republican and everything Trump. Don't think that's going to do any good. That's why we try to do this a little bit different.
Right.
But even people who are trying to piece together the most optimistic story, you're down to, well, there's some decent policy that occasionally comes out. His rhetoric's terrible. And now you just have to learn to ignore what you don't want to hear and take with a grain of salt everything.
And
that
there's
else.
A handful the of best you can rational do. People left in the administration, although that keeps dwindling, you know, in terms of the adults in the room.
Well, I'm shocked that nobody quit after last week. And I think, again, that this group of people that are in his administration are going to be toxic once this administration's done. These people will fade and you'll never hear from them again.
I agree.
Who's hiring Kellyanne Conway or Sarah Huckabee Sanders? There's no way. Or Scott Pruitt. I mean, these people are sacrificing any career that they could have had for this
temporary
is
power, proximity to power.
Is it that good? Is political and temporary power that good of a feeling that you're willing to go through this to get it?
I can't imagine, personally.
So my question is to wrap up our this may have been the second worst week. Well, what other week would have been worse than this? I mean, I don't want to say in American history because...
And Trump's presidency?
In Trump's presidency. Because let me say again, the Democrat that said this was like Pearl Harbor is a moron. The Democrat
right.
that told
Total
Peter Strzok he should get a Purple Heart is an idiot. And people that compared what Trump did to treason are way off base.
Absolutely.
You don't know what you're talking about if you made one of those three references in the past week.
Well, the problem is you lose credibility. And there's so much on the yes. line right now, we don't need to go off the rails.
Don't need to make it worse.
Right. I would say that the one other week would probably be, you know, Charlottesville and his handling of that. I mean, that was a pretty low point of his presidency.
And he dropped in back into the 30s with his approval rating. I saw the generic ballot for the House. Has Democrats back up by 9 points. You're getting back in that wave kind of election thing. If things hold the course and the tariffs keep going the way they're going and trade and relationships and all of this starts happening, we'll take the House, but okay.
Yeah,
I don't really know what that does.
It's kind of hard to say where we go from here, but it's, you know, it's very concerning that we face a very serious threat in terms of involvement in these coming elections as well by the Russians. And
absolutely.
And the extent of that is unknown. And, you know, there was, I can't remember who was saying this week about the red light, you know, that we're.
Yeah, that was Coates.
Yeah.
Who said it's coming.
Director of National
we
Intelligence.
We know it's coming.
We know it's coming. And yet we have a president who won't.
Can't say
that.
It. Won't say it or can't say
And
it.
We just had the indictment, another indictment this week of a Russian spy, Maria Butina, a female spy, infiltrated the NRA, some of these other conservative organizations. I mean, this tale reads like something out of a Hollywood script.
Absolutely.
The TV show The Americans.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think they could bring that show back and just, you know,
absolutely.
Use what's currently happening.
Oh my God.
As
if The Americans
plotline.
Spun a Trump theme through that,
oh,
that would be so good.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Oh.
I've said this before, and this is what I just keep coming back to. There's going to be a bill for the Trump presidency. And I think in our day-to-day lives, the analogy we can all draw, we've all been somewhere where the horrible boss has rolled in, and you know the person's horrible, and you just sit back, and it's like, how much carnage does this person cause before they leave? What's the bill
right.
for this person being here? And usually it's people quit, lack of productivity, you lose customers, all that bad stuff. Same thing is going to happen with this presidency. My biggest, what's really going to be interesting is number one, who has to pick up the tab? And I think it's going to be multiple parties. One, Republicans are going to have to pay a portion of that bill. There's no way. Let's say he goes full term, that he hasn't caused so much damage that you're not putting some pieces back together.
Oh, we rebuilding completely from
absolutely.
The bottom up.
American middle class is going to pay a tab for this.
Right.
I mean, the tax cuts you got, the small ones, they're not going to last. They expire.
Well, and definitely in terms of tariffs and trade policy, with higher prices on consumer goods.
It's all coming. Europe is going to have to pick up part of this tab, apparently, where our relationship with NATO is just not, it can't be the same coming out as it was going in. And my conspiracy theory is that at some level, the Republican leadership will say, hey, in 2 years, here's what we got for the Trump presidency. We got a tax cut through that really excited our donor class. We gutted the EPA. We've knocked out tons of regulations that, depending on where you stand, have opened up economic opportunities. And we've created a climate that's easier and more optimistic for business to operate in. We got two Supreme Court justices. We've gotten dozens of lifetime federal judges. Mm-hmm. And most of all, we stopped Hillary Clinton from becoming president. And as a side benefit, we threw the Democrats into the wilderness, and we still haven't found our way out. Don't you think if Mueller gets you fairly close to where you would need to be as a Republican, you'd say, close enough?
I think so. I mean,
if we got out now, we could still claim victory. If we stay in, that bill is only getting bigger day by day. I have a feeling that at some point someone's going to say, we've had enough. We'll make this happen.
Yeah, that's going to happen. You're going to see the tide turn. And I think you're also going to see that play out. And we talked a little bit about this in terms of a primary challenge. At this point, I think this was the turning point. What happened Monday ensured that's going to happen.
I think Jeff Flake, John Kasich, I think is just a matter of principle are going to primary
or
him.
Ben Sasse.
If he makes it to 2020, and that's going to be awesome to watch that, because nothing eats your young more than a sitting member of the government, including the president, being primaried. Thinking back through history, it's only happened once or twice.
Only a couple. I mean,
Truman got primaried.
Well, yeah,
I'm pretty sure he did.
Well, and Reagan primaried Ford.
But that was really goofy. That point is,
Carter was primaried by Kennedy.
By Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy, the late Ted Kennedy.
It doesn't happen much, but this one's going to be different than anything anybody's ever seen, because this one it's an outside shot, but... And if you primary Trump, you have one goal, create as much damage to him to sink 2020. You're almost doing it as a way to shield the party from destruction.
Yeah, long-term interests of the party versus the president. Yeah.
So did we do any better on not being depressed? I don't feel like we did.
I don't. Yeah, this isn't quite working out due to the news, unfortunately.
I got some feedback that the podcast was really good last week, and it's like, Brandon and I, sometimes you turn the machine off, and it's like, well, that was terrible. You never quite know how they're going to come out through when you actually lay one down and hear it, but hopefully next week we can find something more positive to talk about.
Something lighthearted. We'll get there eventually.
We'll invade somebody, or somebody invades us. Us or something. France won the World Cup. That's big. Yeah. Who cares? I like soccer at all, but come on. I'm kind of pissed that we didn't even show up, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
Yeah, we'll find something next week. All right. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.